Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast, brought to you by our presenting partner, Simplicity Group, featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, and Inside Lacrosse analysts, and my old buddy, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dix, great show on tap this week, as usual. We'll be joined later by Inside Lacrosse, Kevin Brown, who will be our guest picker this week, and there are five fabulous top 20 matchups to preview. So, Dixie, let's get it. Dixie, I sent an email yesterday. It had a quote from the poet Emily Dickinson headlining it. And it said, March is a month of expectation. I live in the neighborhood called Dickinson. And all the street names are like esoteric names of Emily Dickinson poems or first lines. So, for instance, my street is First League. It's not First League Avenue, First League Drive, or Court, or it's just First League. And there's Farthest Thunder and Weather Worn and Harvest Moon. Like, there's like all these names. So I'm like in tune when I see something from her. March is a month of expectation. And I think it translates to the sports scene for sure. Definitely March Madness. College spring sports, high school spring sports are about to start. We got baseball opening day. It's definitely one of the best sports months. There's a lot of expectation as we begin March on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
First of all, Columbia, Howard County is known for goofy street names wherever you go.
Indeed.
I live in Dorsey Hall, and we have some pretty, you know, it's more like earthy names, like, you know, Star Wreath, Bright Rocket. Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, there's a theme for every neighborhood, I think.
Yeah, Fragile Sale is another one that's in my neighborhood. You know, but like Emily Dickinson, what were her expectations? You're putting it in terms of athletic expectations. What were her more like romantic?
I believe that it was about springtime. And how the changing of the seasons and life blossoming during the month of March is what I'm guessing was hers, which is really what's happening in the sports world, right? Is there, I mean, the fall is amazing. Like when college football, NFL, you still got baseball, and like it's pretty awesome. But March is, it the best sports month? I don't even know. It's pretty good.
It's up there.
Yeah,
I think as lacrosse fans, we like May, and then May also brings kind of a confluence of NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, Major League Baseball. The weather is typically
horse racing better. Stuff.
Horse racing. Stuff, yeah. But yeah, I like what you're saying because we're experiencing expectations in terms of the weather.
Yeah,
the brutal February that we had this past weekend, Saturday was terrific. It was great. And Friday and Sunday weren't terrible either. I say that because I was in the stands at Penn on Friday, then Princeton on Sunday. The last couple of days has been crummy because we had more snow. And then we're recording this on Wednesday. Last night, Loyola played Towson. My wife and I elected not to go to Ridley because it was pouring down rain.
And miserable. Yeah.
Bitter and raw. And, you know, with Matt coaching, it's not a situation where, and he, you know, he's focused on the team and the competition and could care less if mom and dad are in the stands. But this weekend is shaping up to be epic. And we're talking about 70 degrees in the mid-Atlantic. So here we go.
Yeah, it's going to be a good weekend. Good win for the Hounds over Towson on Tuesday night.
You want to talk about what a difference a year makes. And I know they're only five games into the season, but watching them play, they got a big win this past weekend beating Colgate. And the Raiders are the defending Patriot League champions. They just create so much chaos with their 10-man ride. And Loyola being able to handle that pressure, score goals in transition, score goals in the 6-on-6, just offensively, they are night and day from last year. And a lot of that credit has to go to Justin Ward, their offensive coordinator now, Loyola graduate, came over from Army They are really, really fun to watch. And they just came out of the gates last night blistering against Towson. And just anytime Towson had an answer, which mostly was Mikey Weisauer, Loyola was able to come back and answer Weisauer. So great win for Loyola. Again, it's early in the season, but I'm really excited because I'll go to Charlottesville this weekend. A prime time game. Well, 6 p.m. is not prime time, but it's close enough. Paul Carcaterra and I have Towson, Virginia. So I'm excited to watch, you know, to have Weisauer in person. I've covered him in the past. And then Virginia is an interesting case with what happened to them this past weekend in the Doyle Smith Cup against Johns Hopkins. They rebounded last night with a nice win over High Point on the road. So that's going to be, you know, that's going to be a really interesting game. I know we're not previewing that game, but I'd be curious to see what the over is in that game.
So you did bounce around the Ivy League last week, a little Ivy League road trip for the Dixons to Penn and Princeton, and you had some comments about atmosphere. I saw a
tweet. Franklin Field sucks. It just sucks. And I've been there before as a player in the 1992 semifinals. We played Syracuse. I get the history. The one end with the brick structure is cool. But let me tell you, the lights there are terrible. There's no lights in either end zone. That's not good. And when I was at Tiger Woods on Sunday, class of 1952 stadium, I mean, it was packed. And just the atmosphere was fantastic. And the aesthetics are gorgeous. And I don't know. I'm just like, I'm looking at you, Penn. You guys have to have, I know they have Penn Park, and I know the men's lacrosse team has played down there in the past. Maybe make that the permanent venue for the men's lacrosse team, because Franklin Field just ain't it. Just yeah, isn't.
I think they like to have their bigger games in Franklin Field, and that's what they picture those two games as. But yeah, it doesn't look great on TV. It's really like the camera's really far away, especially when they're shooting at the goal that is towards the scoreboard, which is like Waitman Hall, is that brick building that looks like Shawshank Prison in the end zone. It's really hard to see what's happening there. And it's closer when it's on the other goal, like the camera angle's closer and where the camera spot is. But it's definitely a better scene at Princeton, and I've been to many games at both of those places at Princeton. Definitely.
Let me give some context too, because the people at Penn, meaning like the security folks, were awesome.
Yeah, those are my guys.
They were really, really nice people, and I don't want to dump on the players or the coaches, because a lot of people will say Maryland shouldn't be playing in CQ Stadium. They should play on Ludwig, where the soccer team plays. And I know that the players, the coaches, the alums take a lot of pride playing there. So I don't want to take that away from the kids or the coaches, but just the experience. And then here's the other thing too. When you watch Penn games that are streamed, the announcers are outside and it looks like they're in the middle of scaffolding, even though they're in. And I know like Panzer Stadium, before Panzer was able to build their press box, they built the stadium. We used to call the game from what was a little structure called a donkey. So you're outside. I can remember one Sunday night we had Penn State, Maryland, and Joe B and I were on the sideline, like literally just outside, because the donkey couldn't be placed in the middle. And we wanted to be in the middle where you could call the game. I mean, Joe still bitches about that night. And he'll bitch about it on the air too. And it was freezing. But you know, it was super, super cold. Announcers should not be outside in this day and age of college lacrosse. They should not be outside. You have to have some press box, some broadcast area where you don't have to dress like you're going on the Iditarod. You know, it just, the whole thing to me just is garbage.
All right. Let's get to the game preview sticks. There's five great games to preview. I want to remind everyone that this is brought to you by our presenting partner, Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. And now it's time to welcome to the show the managing editor of Inside Lacrosse, Kevin Brown. Kevin, thanks for joining us on the DeFi and Dixie podcast.
What a privilege. Thanks for having me, guys.
So, Kevin, you've been at Inside Lacrosse for, this is like your eighth season, right? You started in 2018. And moved from like digital intern to now you're the managing editor. Give the listeners an idea of what the managing editor of Inside Lacrosse does.
Yeah, a little bit of everything. So it's a bit of a dream role for me, loving the game of lacrosse and finding a good passion for media. So like to storytelling. First and foremost is my bread and butter. I love doing the feature stories. We've got a fun magazine deadline week here underway at IL, so we're full throttle with it. And got some high school preview stuff headed your way, so be on the lookout for that. But a lot of reporting, a lot of editing, a lot of social media stuff with our very talented Dan Abern, who... you know, you should have him on next. He's got some metal takes for you guys, apparently. it's a very much a dream. Eight seasons might be pushing it. I did a couple like freelance articles here and there in 2018, 2019. I was very fortunate in 2019 to cover some of the Final Four. I was like a third, fourth writer in that press box with IL, and been hooked ever since. So it's been a joy.
Now, I was reading your bio, and I knew you were a College Park, Maryland Terrapin alum, but I didn't know you went to Salesiana.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a Delaware guy, if you didn't know. Grew up in Newark, went to high school in Wilmington at Tower Hill. Where did you grow up?
Right outside of Newark, Bear, Delaware. Shout out Bear. Shout out the Middletown Rec program. Mohawks down there. You know, we had a sort of a golden generation with me at X. Salisbury all-time points leader, Cross Ferrara, came up in the Middletown system. And my boy, former goalie for Navy, Ryan Curran as well. So some good Delaware shout outs to mention on the pod.
I now know two people from Delaware.
Delaware's had some great, has put out some really quality like Division I players. Not a vast quantity, but some high quality players over the years. Underrated talent pool. And there's quite a few Sally's guys playing across Division I landscape.
Yeah. Right now. Andrew Pettit from your alma mater, went to Lehigh, slick lefty.
Mike Giancarlo was a Tower Hill guy. Was a Tower Hill guy until he went to Culver.
Chase Salucci, Salesiana. Yeah.
Chase Salucci, both him and Rowan Nury, part of that really good Salesiana team that ended up in our top 10 ranking after that 2024 season. And we're tracking a little bit of injury news with them, a little bit of shaken up the last game or two for Salucci. And, you know, that forced Peter Tommen to play down low over the weekend in that Ivy League challenge up there. So Rowan Nury didn't feature in the Richmond game. So hoping for some speedy recoveries for my Sally's guys.
All right, well, let's get into it. Let's start talking about some of these teams. We can talk a little bit about last week's games as we talk about this week's games. Let's start with our first preview. It's number 15, Rutgers, take on number 3, Princeton. Both these teams have only one loss. The game will be at noon. You can see it on ESPN+. The Tigers are 5.5 goal favorites in this one. And this is for Dix. This is for the Maestral Cup. The Maestral Cup between Rutgers and Princeton.
Battle of the Garden State, Battle of the Turnpike. When you look at Rutgers, the biggest thing when I watched their first game of the season against Jacksonville was they rely way too much on Colin Cardilla, and he's terrific. But I love how they've really balanced their scoring out. Cardilla, 23 points on the year, but then you have Grayson Vorgang with 19, Shane Murphy with 11, Colin Zeller with 9. So Scott Beter, the new offensive coordinator, the Rutgers graduate coming over from Michigan, really putting his stamp on the offense. Haven't played the stiffest of competition, but don't look now, but they're 5-1. and they've got one of the best goalies in the country in Carden Stoller, and they're facing off around 52-53%. So this is a solid Rutgers team. And when you look at the out-of-conference performance of the Big Ten, you know, Rutgers is right there in the mix. They're going to have opportunities to compete in the Big Ten this year. And I just think they're a very solid team, very, very solid. This will be a step up in competition for them. Their only loss on the year was to Army, 11-9 back in early February. And this is a Princeton team that is rolling right now. I had a chance to watch them in person against North Carolina. They're big, they're athletic, they're disciplined, and they've got a great goaltender in Ryan Kraddick. I watched him save 24, 25 shots against Carolina. Granted, some of them weren't the best, most high percentage, but he made the saves. And he made saves late in the game. There was a sequence where Dom Petrimala took a shot just a little bit above goal line, extended, rebound. It was a BTB. And Kraddick is just cat quick, lightning fast reflexes. And their offense is a thing of beauty to watch. Constant motion, constant cutting. They've got the dudes to make plays, and they're deep. You know, that there's so much depth on that offense. It's crazy. They had a terrific weekend last weekend, handling Syracuse, outlasting North Carolina. This loss that Princeton had to Penn State is a distant memory at this point, but they can't let their guard down. And I don't think that they will. You know, when you play Syracuse and North Carolina in a 48-hour span, that's a big deal. And they won both those games at home at Tiger Woods. And now they have to face a Rutgers team looking to put their stamp on a 2026 season. Face-offs are going to be critical. I think Princeton has the edge in that one. Goaltending, as good as Kraddick's been, I think Stoller's a little bit better. And you can get shots against this Princeton defense. You can get shots against them. But they are playing a little bit more aggressive this season, matching up well. Their shorties are outstanding. Rutgers has one of their terrific shorties, Younger Kiss. So when you look at the individual matchups all over the field, they're very intriguing. But what can Rutgers do to slow down this Princeton offense and not put the game entirely on Carden Stoller's shoulders?
Yeah, this is an interesting matchup for me. Princeton with Rutgers, you know, the Big Ten, their third Big Ten opponent, right? Having that win against Maryland and falling to Penn State, that loss was. It's looking more and more like their opener versus Penn State coming off very hungry and eager to overcome a loss the week before. From a Rutgers perspective, you're dead on with the fact that they rely so heavily on Colin Cradilla to initiate so much of that offense that it'll be super fascinating to see who Princeton puts on them. The reason I love doing some of the preseason unit rankings content is this is the way we should be evaluating these guys, is how they play in a unit, how they play together cohesively on a string, especially defensively, because you look at the way Jack Stahl came down and defended Joey Spallina again after switching on to him in the NCAA quarterfinals. He holds him pointless, plays Owen Duffy pretty well on Sunday. I know he had a goal and 3 assists, but Jack Stahl is legit. Those guys, I think that'll be a good matchup with Cardella. I expected Finn Fox to really be their number one eraser coming into the season, and Jack Stahl has really emerged and broken out on people's radars following those two marquee matchups. It's interesting to see here you say you got Carden Stoller over Kraddick. 25 saves is no joke, but I agree with you. It's going to have to be advantage Stoller if Rutgers has any chance, because that's the way they're going to overcome the possession disparity, I believe. Well, you're also dead on with the fact that they're going to struggle at the faceoffs. So if you're struggling to get possessions and you're struggling to be efficient offensively, it's going to be some tough sledding. I've picked Princeton every game so far this season. It's tough to pick against them here in a New Jersey battle.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the Tigers win this one as well. And the 25 saves Kraduk had this weekend passed his 24 saves, which was his previous career high, against Rutgers last year. So I'm taking the Tigers in this one. All right, our second game is number 13-ranked Georgetown. We'll travel down to Richmond to take on the 5-0 Spiders. Game is at noon. See it on ESPN+. And the Spiders are 2.5-goal favorites in this one. Kevin, what do you think?
Yeah, talking to head coach Dan Tramati and the game-winner hero, eventually for the Spiders' marquee signature win up in Ithaca, Gavin Creo, post-game. And, you know, they were elated. That they seemed pretty level-headed. They were excited for the 8-hour bus ride home. But coming up against a Georgetown crew who'll be very eager to overcome a couple losses here, it's going to be an interesting matchup because these are two teams that I was very high on in terms of, you know, I wrote a pretty long feature of Richmond's roadmap for new programs and how to go about things. You know, short answer is you got to get coaches like Dan Tramati and Paul Richards on your staff because the way they teach the fundamentals have made them so efficient over the years. And just listening to the breakdown of that game-winning goal, it's like the thing that stands out most, Tramati, oh, look at the stick path on Creo, making sure he's open, that Sheridan knows he's open. Great fundamental overhand, high to low finish. It's a dagger, 64 seconds left. And that's huge. Best start program history. How the thing that caught my eye was Hunter Smith did pretty well against CJ Kearse last season. CJ found a lot of ways to impact the game in other ways. He covered Willem Firth last game, and Michael Farrell stayed on Ryan Goldstein in that matchup. So that was interesting to me. I think that translates over to the Connor brothers. Expect Hunter Smith to stay on that lefty action with Rory and his quarterbacking skills. How does the deep midfield Georgetown cultivated last year start to produce more as we go along here? Because this is a good rope unit for Richmond. So I think that's kind of the key battle there with Jack Pilling, Braden Pennefeather, Stevenson headlining things against a pretty loaded Georgetown crew. So how does that come down? And I think it'll be another game of long possessions. How does Georgetown overcome losing their top two faceoff guys, Ross Prince, Van Buren's been out, and convincing Gaylord stay hot at the stripe, coming off a great game against All-American and Jackass Gatton?
We talked about it last week. Georgetown, probably the one team that's been most adversely affected by the weather, losing two games. Then their game against Notre Dame moved to an indoor facility that's kind of like playing in somebody's basement. It's been a hard road for Georgetown. And then you have an Ohio State team come in last weekend that really wasn't getting a lot of respect. A team that really keeps dropping in the Inside Lacrosse Kane media poll, basically due to what people perceive as, you know, a lack of top-notch competition, whereas other teams are beating other teams. But you hit the nail on the head. It's been musical chairs at the face-off dot for our friend, the face-off Yoda, Ted Moon, trying to figure out who's going to take those draws. And offensively, you only have one player in double digits point-wise, and that's Rory Connor. So, you know, Georgetown, a lot of room to grow. They're lacking the game experience that other teams have had with such a long layoff between their scrimmage against Maryland and then when they finally got out on the field to play somebody in the University of Pennsylvania, which, again, we're seeing Penn be probably a lot better than people thought they were going to be in 2026. So for me, this game, you know, really comes down to Georgetown's execution, their ability to crack this tough Richmond defense, and their ability to play very disciplined, because Richmond is a team that plays well into the shot clock and makes you earn everything, kind of like Georgetown does. And they certainly have the defensive personnel to do that. If you're Richmond, how about this? Their first four games at home, you're talking about attendance. You almost had 4,000 people for the Virginia game. And then they had over 1,000, 1,200 for all the other games. Then you go to defending national champions at Shokoff, and the attendance was 342 people. So they did well playing in that big old stadium against the defending national champs and weathering a couple of runs and just battling. So you got to give a ton of credit to Richmond and their coaching staff. I put the Spiders as number one in the country. They were my number one team this week in the IL Kane media poll. And you look at their balance offensively. I mean, they've got six guys with double-digit points, with Aiden O'Neill, our guest last week on the podcast, leading with 24 points. But you just look at the balance. Sheridan with 18 points, Creo with 15, and Lucas Littlejohn is a goal scorer, but he does have one assist in there. So this is going to be a tough battle. I anticipate this one being very similar to the games that each of these teams had last week. Low scoring, maybe the first to 10 wins, but even if it's 8-7, 9-8, whatever the case may be, it'll be nip and tuck. Georgetown really needs this game. They really need this game to get their season back on track and to level up to the expectations that we all have for them. This is a great opportunity for the Hoyas.
The over-under in this game is 22.5. So Dixie,
that makes sense.
Yeah, so look, kind of low scoring, like maybe like a 11-10 type game. I'm going to take the Spiders in this game. Who are you taking, Kevin?
Yeah, I'm going Spiders as well. I like the Georgetown close defense against Aiden O'Neill and that attack, but I think they have too many good midfielders. This Sheridan Creo, Daniel Picard is looking really good this year. Midfield line is going to give them some headaches, and I'm going Spiders.
All right. Again, that game is at noon. You can catch that on streaming on ESPN Plus. Our third game is number 7 Cornell at number 14 Penn State. We've talked a little bit about each of these teams so far in this show. This game's at 1:00. Fans can catch it on the Big Ten Plus network. Cornell is a 1.5 goal favorite in this one. The over-under is 23.5. Dixie, what are your thoughts on this game?
Will the real Penn State please stand up? Because you want to talk about a roller coaster of a season. Open the season with a solid win over Colgate. Game goes as you would expect it, high scoring, frenetic. Then they lose in overtime to Villanova. Then they go and they wax Princeton in the middle of February. And then lose to Navy on the road. And then this past weekend, they just dust Yale, who was playing pretty good lacrosse coming into the game. You know, now they've got Cornell coming off of a loss, the Tambroni Bowl. It seems like Preston Hawkins has settled down a little bit between the pipes for Penn State. And they're so balanced offensively. When a guy like Hunter Aquino gets keyed on, you have other players that can step up, and you're going to need that balance against Cornell. This is a big red team that easily could have won the game against Richmond. I don't mean easily in a flippant way. It was just two evenly matched teams battling it out. And then, you know, Richmond just made more plays down the end to get across the finish line. And I think they may have had, and this is nothing to take away from Cornell, but maybe Richmond had a little bit extra motivation losing twice to the Big Red last year in very slim fashion, the latest of which was in the NCAA quarterfinals. This game is always emotional. With the ties that Jeff Tambroni has to Cornell, the George Boriarty situation. It's Youth Lacrosse Day in Panzer, so expect a lot of kids out there. Granted, they don't have practice at 1:00. One of Dan Flynn's pet peeves, noon and 1:00 start times on Saturdays for these big games. I mean, hey, I know we're not there yet, but like, how about Hopkins, Virginia, man? Hats off, 3:00. What a great start time for that game. Great. I mean, I wasn't moving off the couch. I was spent after being last week in Denver and then doing the up and back on Friday from Philadelphia. I went for a nice walk in the morning, got the heart pumping, got the steps in.
There you go. You know, It's the biggest perk of having a women's doubleheader before your game. Virginia Stanford playing at noon before in Charlottesville. It is that effect of, you know, you get a later window for the men's game. But in the inverse effect, if you go later with the women's game as well, you get some of the men's crowd sticking around. So I love these doubleheaders when they can pan out like that.
Well, either way, I watched all the noon games, went, got a snack, used the facilities, and then planted my butt right back on the couch for Hopkins, Virginia, which turned out, I mean.
Did you leave in the third quarter?
What?
Did you leave in the third quarter at all? Be honest.
How dare you? How dare you? Of course not. Of course not. I will say around four. Yeah. Happy hour in the Dixon household on Saturday starts at 4 o'clock. So that made the second half even better with a few refreshments. But again, you know, getting back to Cornell, Penn State, I digress. This game is going to be competitive. Just the inconsistency of Penn State has me concerned for the Nittany Lions and the Big Ten overall. I mean, I say that this conference is wide open because, you know, this typically when we get into the month of March, the Big Ten has several nice wins under their belt and they just don't have those this year. In large part to Maryland losing three in a row. So this is a big one for the Big Ten in terms of their conference rep and their conference, conference standing amongst, you know, the scene nationally in men's college lacrosse.
No doubt. My read on the Penn State situation, I agree that you're right to call out which Penn State will stand up for this game. My read is that they got the demons out with that Navy loss. You know, you drop one to Villanova indoors, fine. You can write that off, Luba Hall. You come out in Princeton, you're feeling good after that confident win. So I can see the drop-off there. I think they're locked in because from the rest of the way here, coming away from that Yale game, a couple things stand out. Another great Alex Ross performance. Another three calls turnover game for him. Jack Ionato. The freshman from Maryland is playing really well at attack with Aquino and Kyle Lehman over on the left side and Liam Matthews sprinkling in there. So they just come at you in waves, man, with these three midfield lines, blue, navy, white midfield lines. They get 8-9 guys that are just running downhill and right down your throat. So for Cornell, you're coming off a season where these were the only guys that beat you, and you're coming off a loss against Richmond now. So a tough two-game stretch for them, and it'll be interesting to see how they bounce back. And you know, this was really the first time that I've been higher on Cornell than I think most this preseason going into now week five it is, because I was so high on Willem Firth slotting in seamlessly for CJ Kirst. He's done that to a large extent. You only score three second half goals against Richmond. Two of them came from Goldstein unassisted. The next one was Ryan Waldman on a defensive breakdown. He just walks it right in. So you got to get some more second half production. And against this Penn State defense, of course, freshman Preston Hawkins has got to show up for this big game. But those are the keys. And this Alex Ross, Ryan Goldstein matchup is going to be super, super exciting.
So who do you like in this game to win, Kevin?
I'm going Cornell bounce back, but I still have faith in Penn State. But to keep it concise, I'll keep it Cornell.
Yeah, I think in a really close game, Cornell gets the victory as well. All right, moving on. We talked about the Blue Jays a little bit and their big comeback win in Charlottesville last week. They will host number 12 Syracuse at 1 p.m. on ESPN. The Orange are 1.5 goal favorites in this long-term rivalry. Kevin, we'll give you the first crack at this one.
Yeah, aside from, I think, all the narratives that had her out there about the Syracuse Orange group playing outside in the month of February, the woes that come with that. I'm really interested to see the schemes in terms of Syracuse offense being able to generate one-on-one. And this Hopkins defense went, we've noticed as an Inside Lacrosse staff, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me right now in terms of the unassisted goals that they've given up. They slid so quickly and rotated so often last year under James McCorrister that it's just been a complete flip this year that they are really, really slow to slide. And I expect them to sort of play the same way against Cuse and Joey Spleen and company. Plenty of options that can be in that midfield. So seeing who they stick in goal after, you know, Dash Lamini stayed on the bench after fouling, and Orange Linus' dozen saves in Charlottesville were really key in sparking a comeback. So those are really the things I'm looking out for.
This is an interesting game when you consider Syracuse losing to Princeton on Friday. Then they were able to come from behind against Penn and beat them on overtime on Sunday to have some momentum. I don't buy into this whole playing outside thing. They're playing. Look at the Syracuse schedule. I mean, this schedule is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, this schedule, you go Maryland, Harvard, Princeton, Penn, then you go Hopkins. And again, they took Duke's spot in the ACC Ivy Challenge. So kudos to Syracuse. I think that the Orange, we saw Virginia make a lot of mistakes that allowed Hopkins to get back into the game last weekend. And we saw Syracuse make a ton of mistakes this past weekend. That's how they play. They're back to the Roy Simmons philosophy versus John Desko. I'm not saying one is better than the other, but this Syracuse team just has carte blanche to be creative, to get up and down the field. They're going to allow you opportunities to get back in games or to win games, whatever the case may be. But there's just talent all over the field. I think the question that everybody's asking themselves right now is was Syracuse overhyped in the preseason? Because the mindset has been national championship or bust with this senior class. And this is another test for them coming into Homewood Field against a Johns Hopkins team. What was that score? 11-4? Everything was going the way of Virginia. And I applaud them making the switch from Dash Lamity to Orange Linus. And you kind of, it's interesting. I was, during the game, I'm texting with friends who are goalies, a number of them. And I'm like, you have Dash, who the criticism is he flops. And then Jelinus, the criticism of him is he doesn't move. So I'm like, you got two contrasting styles. But Jelinus was superb, whether he moved or not, with the saves that he made on Saturday. And I think the one thing when you look at Virginia, it's like, why were they 10-man riding up by 7 goals? Like, that was just, you know, a little suspect. But we'll leave that for another day. But with regard to Hopkins, the offense is clicking. The second midfield continues to be a work in progress. We saw another iteration of the second midfield. You know, the mainstays have been Eric Chick and Dusqui on that second line. And that third position has just been a revolving door. I think a player that flew under the radar that needs a lot of credit is Luke Martin. He bumped down and played close. And I didn't have that game, nor do I have their game this weekend. So I don't know what's going on with Parker Sorensen, the talented freshman who is playing at an incredibly high level. I too, Kevin, am interested in the matchups. Do you put Carson Brown on Joey Spallina, just with the big body, the range, the length that he has? Or is that Quentin Kilrain's assignment? How will they manage that third defensive spot? Does Martin bump back up into his traditional long stick midfield position? Or does he stay down at close? And then you're facing another animal at the faceoff dot in John Mullen. And I say that with all due respect, because that guy is an absolute beast. What is the situation with Joey Hobot? for Johns Hopkins? Does he come back and play? And how about Johns Hopkins? What's it, Kryzik? And then yep. Terry alluded to his story. You know, his thoughts go out to his family with the loss of their home due to fire. You know, he's a guy. Would they just? I mean, was he just hanging out at the Biltmore down there in Charlottesville, and they just pulled him out and they're like, okay, take some face-offs for us. So incredible story there. The possession disparity, though, even if Hobot's able to play, Mullen is an animal. And I think that they're going to control the face-off dot. And goaltending will once again be huge in this one.
This is the hardest game for me to pick this week. Orange again are 1.5 goal favorites. I'm going to take the Jays at home in a tight one. Kevin?
Syracuse, just too many weapons to defend. I'm going Cuse.
Again, that game is at 1 o'clock, and there's another game on our schedule. This one is at 2 p.m., and it may be the best game of the weekend. Number 4, Notre Dame, they're undefeated. We'll travel to Columbus to take on number 10, Ohio State, also undefeated. The Irish are 2.5 goal favorites in this one. Huge game in Columbus this week. Fans can catch it on the Big Ten Plus Network. Dixie, I'm going to let you start off on this one.
This is where you have to kind of take a step back and appreciate what these two programs, how they've evolved over the years. This used to be the Great Western Lacrosse League and two outsiders, if you will, trying to figure it out, trying to make their mark on the Division I landscape. Now you're looking at an Ohio State program that has won a Big Ten regular season and tournament championship. They've appeared in a national championship game. Notre Dame has won two national championships in addition to all the other great things that they've done in lacrosse. So these two have become, they've gone from like the Midwest afterthoughts to elite programs in college lacrosse. Speaking with a number of people that were on the field in the Maryland-Notre Dame game, what they came away saying was this Notre Dame team's a lot better than people think. They think that with losing the Kavanaughs and Faison not coming back and, you know, the personnel over the last couple of years that are no longer playing for the Fighting Irish, that this team was going to have a big drop-off. They have not. They're outstanding. They're still well-coached. They're stingy defensively. They're opportunistic offensively. They're balanced. And they're a handful to deal with. Ohio State, I think they got a lot of people's attention last week when they were able to knock off Georgetown. And that was like a baseball game in the first half, 3-2 at half. And then it really opened up in the second half for both ball clubs. And we've talked a lot about the Yale transfers now playing for Maryland. Lyons, Johnson, Alexander. How about Brad Sharp? He came up big last weekend with 2 goals. I think he figures heavily into the plans of the Buckeyes. And even with the loss of Bobby Van Buren, I think Ohio State showing that they're still among the elite in terms of defense. So this is an interesting matchup. It's at, I expect Ohio State Lacrosse Stadium to be packed. I think it'll be great. This will be a slugfest. Ohio State beating Notre Dame in the regular season last year. A lot of the Buckeye Nation was crying foul when they won the Big Ten tournament and then were rewarded with a game against Notre Dame, even though it was at home and the Irish took care of business. So the chip on the shoulder, I think, for the Buckeyes is a little bit bigger than Notre Dame's normally is.
No doubt. That reward for that hosting the first game in the tournament was no joke. And again, you're dead on with the fact that these guys blow a 6-goal lead, Notre Dame does, in the quarterfinals, and we act like they fell off a cliff talent-wise. The question mark was at attack, right? And when you lose Chris Kavanaugh, Jake Taylor, and Luke Miller is really stepping up, Brock Berman had he's having so many balanced games down low at attack. We knew all the knowns coming back in the midfield. Jalen Seymour, Fisher Finley's big body on the second line. you got Will Angrick, is one of my favorite players in college lacrosse, and just a group of contributors. At any moment, Will Maharis always seems to have like 2-1. So this is an interesting matchup because Ohio State's defense suffocated kind of a Georgetown unit that was similarly very talented. And on the other end, when you bring back Sean Light, Will Donovan, and I'm really high on Thomas Ricciardelli. He's sub 50%, but so is Ryan Kroddick going into last game. So things can change in an instant for these goalies. And when you're coming against this Ohio State attack, I'm a big Garrett Hawes guy. Alex Marinet can stretch any defense. And I think he took some possessions off to the end of the Georgetown game. So seeing how he is early on will be something to watch. Russell Melendez, how does he mix in? Because Cleve Hawker's been so good at the lefty spot, filling in for him. And you're right on to mention Brad Sharp. Logan Solberg, I'm also a fan of, coming from Yale. And you got Liam White taking the poles as a freshman. So that's a great midfield unit and some great battles all around the field. But I agree with you that the hunger aspect advantage Ohio State, but I'm going to pick the Irish for this one.
All right. This is a tough one, too. I think Irish are 2.5 goal favorites. I think Ohio State covers that, but I take the Irish on the money line to win the game. And again, that's a 2 o'clock game. Catch it on the Big Ten Plus network. Great slate of games. Make your plans how you're going to watch these and enjoy as much as you can. Do what Dixie does. Like, get your things done. Get your snacks together and get on that couch so you can watch these games and flip back and forth. All right, it's time for our give and go. This week's topic, deli sandwiches. So I think, Dix, we've talked, I'm sure we have, some at some point, we've ranked like chains, like, you know, on the Capriotti's from Delaware. I know, Kevin, you probably know some Capriotti's. Locally, like the Jersey Mike's is really like the best kind of chain thing. But I want to talk about the sandwiches themselves. And I have a list of a top four, and I had to put it in like hot sandwiches, cold sandwiches. So, hot would be like your meatball or cheesesteak or something. And I want to get your guys' rankings, and I'll start so you guys can think about this. And I'll give you a little background. My grocery store has like an order ahead thing, and they have really good subs. Like, they actually have good rolls, and they make a good sub. There's a woman named Ann. Shout out to Ann, who makes the subs there. And you can get them for $6.99. It's like this on Fridays. They're cheap. It's like discounted, like, whole subs. So I get those a lot on Fridays.
Where is this again?
At the Harris Teeter. Any Harris Teeter grocery store.
Harris Teeter, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, in the deli there. So here's my ranking. Italian cold cut is the way to go. If you're going to, like, a Jersey Mike's, or you got to get – that's my favorite. No doubt about it. But I don't often get that at the Harris Teeter because all the subs are the same price. So, like, you know, roast beef, you go to the deli and you get a pound of roast beef or you get a pound of turkey, roast beef is going to cost a lot more. But the subs are the same price and they give you the same amount of beef. So usually it's like roast beef is my go-to at the Harris Teeter. I love tuna. Tuna salad on a sub, especially Fridays during Lent. It's my kind of move. And then turkey is my cold, like, fourth choice. So if I'm ranking again, Italian cold cut, tuna, then roast beef, then turkey. That's my ranking of four. Kids love turkey. You can always, like, if you have leftovers, you give a slice to the kids. Hot sandwiches. Regular cheesesteak. Chicken cheesesteak. Underrated. Didn't even know they existed until I came to Baltimore, and that was, like, a thing. But, like, what was the place? Pasta Mistas or something? What's the place that was near Hopkins? Dixie?
Pizza Peel.
Pizza Peel. Was there. No, but it was down 33rd Street. Oh, you know what I'm talking about.
I didn't go too far down 33rd Street. Oh, that was on Mama Lucia.
Mama Lucia's, yes.
I did go, I was on Greenmount. Yeah,
Greenmount and 33rd. Their chicken cheesesteak's fantastic. And then I go meatball and then chicken parm. So to recap, cheesesteak, chicken cheesesteak, meatball, chicken parm. Those are my top fours. Kevin, you're our guest. I'll let you start. Do you have a ranking of cold subs versus, and then do you have a ranking of hot subs?
Fantastic subject to bring me on for, because I am passionate about hoagie sandwiches. I'll tell you what. I've got in my Twitter bio that I'm a Wawa lover. So I've got a preface with that. Wawa sandwiches are my thing. I love them. Wawa hoagies any day of the week. I can do it. But really, it's the consistency, but also just anywhere I'll get a turkey cheese sandwich. So interesting to hear both your fourth ranked. I would rank first for both categories.
Love to do it.
Parm also on the hot side. Then I'd go Italian, roast beef, tuna. I like that. I like those shouts in that order. And turkey cheese takes the cake. A little lettuce, tomato, pepper, pickles. Give it to me. Some chipotle mayo. Oh, now we're talking.
All right, so do you have anything after chicken parm? If you're from, like, Delaware, you're kind of from, like, a Philly suburb, and they know how to make cheesesteaks in Wilmington. They know how to do it.
Yeah, 100%. I love a good cheesesteak. I wouldn't say it's in my top three. I would add meatballs, meatball sub, and I don't know, I'm interested in your take, Dan, of when it comes around Thanksgiving time. If you're Bobby. Going to Capriati's and you're getting a Bobby, are you getting it cold or are you getting it hot? Because I might have that in the cold section.
I get it cold.
Yeah.
And they're, I agree. I mean, it's
a little too sloppy.
Gravy
on it.
You can't get those around here, so I didn't put that in mind. But like there's a sub chain Kevin knows well called Capriati's. In like in and around Delaware, there's one in Vegas and there's one in Austin, but it's the best. And they have a sub called the Bobby, which is like a Thanksgiving dinner on a roll that's delicious. All right, Kevin, that's top notch. I love your list, Dixie. I'll turn this over to you. Closing.
Yeah, stellar. Yeah, I love sandwiches. I do. I wish I didn't. I love bread. I wish I didn't. So. I don't think this is a hot take, but my grocery store that I frequent is Giant, and you only get sandwiches from there if you're in a bind, because the grocery store sandwiches are garbage for the most part. So I'm going to make a recommendation to you, D-Fly. Go to Jimmy John's for your tuna. I think it's the number 15. I hold the cucumber, add hots. So that's an incredible sandwich. The tuna at Jimmy John's, in my opinion.
All right.
Get a pickle quartered. They'll take a big deal pickle and quarter it for you. So that's outstanding. The other cold sub that I really like is Potbelly's chicken salad. So do the chicken salad, no cheese, with hot. I love Potbelly. Wawa's stellar is outstanding. But I'm very particular when it comes to sandwiches. So the Wine Merchant, the Bomber, cold sub, outstanding. And their shrimp salad's excellent as well. I don't eat it anymore because that was like the last vestige of the shellfish I could have without having a reaction. But I ate some shrimp a couple years ago and didn't feel great. So cut that out. As far as hot sandwiches, I had an incredible panini last Friday, the pregame. Up in Philadelphia, a place called La Scala, and they had a chicken parm panini. So it was chicken parm served on focaccia bread, and you could either get sauce on it or on the side, and I got vodka sauce on the side. So I cut the sandwich in half and was dipping the sandwich in the vodka sauce. It was unbelievable. And when it comes to cheesesteaks, I think I've said this before, and this might be very controversial. When you go to New York and get pizza, New York pizza is on another level. To me, a cheesesteak in Philly is okay. It's not great. There is one place, though, that I would go on championship weekend, and I can't remember which one it was. The folks that are Philly say it was Angelo's that I went to, but their cheesesteak is really good. But in Elk Ridge, we've got Cheesesteak and Company, and that place is phenomenal. I mean, their cheesesteak, they're the ones, they cook the meat with the cheese. And I don't get whiz. I don't do the wit. I do regular cheese all the time. So Cheesesteak and Company is absolutely phenomenal. And the Mama Lucia chicken cheesesteak, and I haven't had one of those. I don't even know if Mama Lucia is still in business on Greenmount. But that was legendary. Like
Yeah,
that
that's lovely.
that was a legendary sandwich. Yeah, so those are my picks. And I can be very specific and I can go in even and
Oh, you're getting me hungry, boy.
Ricky Bobby. So the Ricky Bobby when the championships were in Foxborough, not this last go round, but I think it was 2017, 2018, and we stayed at Patriot Place. I ate at Capriati's like two or three times, and I had one too many Ricky Bobbies. The last one just goes like, oh, this is gross. So I haven't had one since, you know. But
I love you calling them Ricky Bobbies.
Yes. <It's> like, he calls them Ricky Bobbies, Tiger Woods. Like, that's just like how he calls it. It's
right.
So I'm just sitting back listening to your analysis of the lacrosse games, the previews, and it's really deep knowledge. But you guys are amateurs about lacrosse when it compared to sandwiches.
Oh,
I'm so impressed.
Without question.
So impressed with your sandwich knowledge. Like, Dixie, your level of like, I like this particular sub at this place. That's where I'm going to, like, man. And Kevin, Wawa shout out. I get it. The meatball sub at Wawa is one of, it's like a late night.
Yeah. I'm a little less particular. I will add the buffalo chicken hoagie as my third spot. Forgot to round it out. So,
man. Yeah.
One of the biggest things that I do when I go to Ann Arbor to call Michigan games, loyal listener of the pod and a fan of our Scott Kemp's, we get into deep discussions on what's better, Zingerman's or Maize and Blue Deli. You know, we talk more about sandwiches than we do lacrosse.
That seems like a good place to stop. A reminder, the D-Fly and Dixie podcast is brought to you by Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. Special thanks to this week's guest, Kevin Brown. Thanks for joining us. Do us a favor. Like us on your favorite podcast app. Subscribe. Leave a review. Tell a friend. Share the love. It's free. And it always helps us out. If you want to get a hold of us, you can email us at dflyanddixie@gmail.com or find us on Twitter and Instagram at dflyanddixie. Thanks for listening. And as always, enjoy the games.